Security Ledger podcasts reach an audience of thousands of information technology and information security professionals. If that's an audience that you'd like to reach, think about becoming a Security Ledger podcast sponsor. To find out more about sponsoring our podcast, point your web browser to securityledger.com/sales. Hello, this is the Security Ledger Podcast, and I'm Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. In this week's episode of the podcast, number 173.
Tensions flaring after a U.S. drone strike last week killed Iran's top military official, General Qasem Soleimani. More than a million united in their cry for revenge.
Revenge must happen, and it is certain.
The news this week was all about Iran after the targeted killing, or should we say assassination, of Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani on January 3rd in Baghdad. Speculation worldwide immediately began about how the regime in Tehran might retaliate. The answer to that seemed to come 5 days later when Iran launched a missile attack on U.S. military facilities inside Iraq. But those strikes now look more symbolic, with no casualties and little damage reported as a result. That isn't likely to be the last we hear from Tehran following the killing of a senior official and a man who amounted to a national hero. As our guest this week points out, the Iranian government's next move or moves may well happen online and may not take place for days, weeks, or even months. Levi Gundert is the Senior Vice President of Global Intelligence at the cyber threat intelligence firm Recorded Future, which has reported extensively on Iran's offensive cyber capabilities. Gundert talks about the fact that Iran has a well-developed offensive cyber capability and a record of acting methodically and forcefully against both civilian and government targets worldwide. In this interview, Levi and I talk about what distinguishes Iranian cyber actions from those of other nation states and how Tehran might choose to respond to U.S. aggression online.
Levi Gundert, I'm the Senior Vice President of Global Intelligence at Recorded Future. I think what's interesting, if you look at the historical precedent here, Iran has really only had a cyber capability for about a decade now, and their capabilities continue to improve. And they've been very active in terms of intelligence gathering, and we continue to monitor those types of activities from them. But there's also been these events over the years that have been sort of large, you know, trigger events. And you go back and you look at 2012, President Obama was applying sanctions to Iran. And about the same time, there was a video released on YouTube and sort of unclear exactly what causation was for what became known as Operation Ababil. But essentially, Iran started denial of service attacks against America's largest financial services companies and really got their attention. And that was really kind of when the banks started to really pay attention to that threat vector. You know, and you fast forward a little bit and we see the attack on Saudi Aramco with the Shamoon wiper. And you fast forward, you know, again, and you see the attack on the Sands Corporation, the large gaming entertainment company, shortly after Mr. Adelson made his remarks, you know, derogatory remarks about Iran. And that was one of those stories that actually didn't get a lot of coverage, but was super interesting in terms of the impact to operations that that attack had. And so I think, you know, if you go back and you kind of look at the historical precedent, they absolutely have retaliated in the cyberspace and the cyber domain when they felt it was necessary and appropriate. And so, you know, that's the big question now is this event something that they feel the response will be adequate enough? They're partially using the cyber domain. And again, it's really, you know, speculation at this point.
And of course, Iran has the distinction of being the victim of what we all think of, at least, as the first publicly acknowledged nation state attack, which was attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility, Stuxnet. I think the conventional wisdom is that their cyber program started in response to that, having been victimized. Is that actually true, or does it go back further than that? And how sophisticated and advanced is Iran compared to some of the other countries we usually talk about, China, Russia, North Korea, and so on?
Well, I think it's very interesting because, like you said, that was that time frame was you know, 2008, and subsequent to that was the Green Party Revolution, which happened in Iran very close to that event. And I actually think it was the combination of both those events actually where, you know, the Iranian government sort of woke up and said, you know, we need to have a capability here for multiple reasons. And the Green Party revolution, you know, was part of that as well. And I think they really tried to jumpstart the program around that time. And so they're 10 years behind, say, China. Right. China has been very active for two decades plus in this domain, whereas Iran really did start right around 2009, 2010. Now, prior to that, there were certainly talented individuals inside of Iran that were part of communities, online communities. Some would call them, you know, hacker forums. But in terms of sort of operationalizing formally that capability, it really started around that time. And again, they have shown themselves to be very capable. Very, very capable. Again, you know, if you look at the string of attacks, and it's also interesting, SAMSAM, the ransomware, you know, the US DOJ actually attributed that to actors inside of Iran. And it's unknown whether, you know, they were acting at the behest of the Iranian government or whether they're sort of operating in their own silo. But they made a lot of money and they impacted operations across, you know, multiple US cities, including, you know, the port of San Diego. And I, you know, there's a lot of different data points sort of in that 10-year timeline that show that they really do have some real capabilities, and it would be a mistake to underestimate that.
So when I think about Iran, I think about Shamoon and Iran being a country that was early to embrace destructive malware. Shamoon was a wiper malware. Is that distinctive of them, their willingness to, as it were, go there and deploy to actually truly destructive malware against their targets?
Yeah, so it's not super common. I think, you know, the other corollary there would obviously be North Korea in 2014 and the attack on Sony. That was something very similar, but you don't see those types of attacks frequently. And I think, you know, that's part of the motivation behind the attack and is sending a message and really retaliation. And I think, you know, Iran is somewhat unique in that category in terms of, you know, that type of activity. And we continue to see other types of similar wipers that are being deployed, Deadwood, Zero Clear, all very similar to Shamoon that we continue to see sort of surface here. And, you know, in December of last year, there was that attack on the Italian petrochemical giant, SIPIM. And, you know, they continue to sort of set a pattern here in terms of destructive attacks. And I do think that's something that we haven't really seen out of China. We haven't really seen that out of, you know, Russia, where the primary motivation has been intelligence gathering for, you know, various initiatives, whether it be economic advantage or you know, other types of initiatives.
Geopolitical advantage, yeah, right.
Absolutely. And in this case with Iran, you know, they do seem to be sort of in their own category when it comes to this kind of retaliation.
Yeah, and what was interesting about the Italian, it was SIPIM, is that how you pronounce that company's name?
I believe so.
Yeah. They, of course, were a target merely because they were a supplier. It's kind of like they were going up the supply chain from Saudi Aramco and some of their usual targets in Saudi Arabia to the companies, you know, in this case, an EU company that was simply a services and parts supplier to them and going after them, which is I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And I think that really speaks to the current situation in terms of targeting. You know, if you're a contractor or you're anywhere in the supply chain, you should probably be, you know, thinking about risk in this particular geopolitical scenario.
Who are your customers, right? So when we think about Iran and the way that they operate in the Middle East and elsewhere in the world, really all over the world, I think we typically think of them working through other groups, right? Whether that's Hezbollah or in Yemen, working through, you know, domestic groups who are closely aligned with the regime to accomplish their goals. Is that true in the cyber realm as well? Are they a country that does things using their own staff, or are they willing to use contractors and outsiders to achieve their ends in the cyber domain as well?
Yeah, that's something I think is very unique to Iran in terms of their reliance on the contractors and the third parties. And we wrote a report last year where we talked about some of this in terms of, you know, Iran is a theocracy and the way that they operate is a little bit different than, you know, the 9-to-5 jobs where you're going into work for the PLA in China or the Ministry of State Security, for example.
Theocracy's 24/7 commitment, man.
That's right. That's right. It's a hardcore commitment. So
hardcore.
There's different motivations, and there's a little bit of, we don't want the left hand knowing what the right hand's doing. And so, you know, we've talked to human sources who have said that, you know, there is a middle layer inside of Iran that has shown sort of loyalty to the regime. And they do the tasking with various contractors. And these contractors, one may be responsible for setting up infrastructure. Another may be responsible for developing the tools. You know, and that third contractor is responsible for actually executing some of the attacks. And part of that, we think, is because it helps with some of the mistrust that happens within the government.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and it sort of, you know, helps them. And we've even seen that in terms of the DOJ indictments with the Mobna Institute. So, you know, you see IT contractors, you know, that look like generic IT contractors within Iran carrying out the work. You see even some of their educational academic institutions getting in on this. So it's a very murky, in terms of attribution, it's very murky. You know, we talk about groups like ABT 33, 34, 35, 39, yeah. Muddy Water. It's very difficult to nail down who exactly these groups are and who they report to, and then who, you know, that middle tier management reports to. You know, is it the IRGC directly? Is it some other group? And it's sometimes opaque. And so, you know, it makes it interesting from a defender's perspective, you know, in terms of attribution. And then again, you know, we recently released a report where we actually were tracking Russian sponsored groups that were piggybacking on Iranian infrastructure.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes it even harder. So it's a very muddy picture at the end of the day.
I meant to ask you, we talk about SAMSAM and some of the other Shamoon. Generally, are they doing as other countries do and sort of building on what's out there, sort of in terms of malicious code, building on what's out there in the, you know, cyber criminal underground? Or is this bespoke malware that they're creating internally in Iran?
They're using both. So some of the tools that they have deployed are, as you mentioned, bespoke. They're proprietary. You know, they develop them themselves, but we also see them leveraging a lot of the open source tools that are out there. So NJRAT, NanoCore, Dark Comet, PowerShell Empire, PewPyRAT. These are tools that you can download on GitHub. You can make small modifications to them or use them as is. And, you know, we continue to see them using the whole suite of tools. Now, when it comes to initial unauthorized access, you know, the primary mechanisms right now are phishing, password reuse, and web shells.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really a mixed bag, and I think they are very happy to leverage the existing tools that are out there if they don't have to use something proprietary.
So, I mean, this is a very fast-moving situation, obviously, just in the last, you know, less than a week since the assassination in Baghdad, the targeted killing, however you want to talk about it. And so, you know, again, fast moving situation. And we're hearing a couple different threads. On the one hand, there's been news coming out in recent days saying that, you know, Hezbollah is saying that, you know, any retaliation should be against the U.S. military and not against civilian targets. And then we've also had reports that from the senior leadership in the regime that there's interest in the Trump organization and soft targets with, you know, President Trump's name on them. If you were to guess or speculate as to how Iran might respond in the cyber realm, what would be your thinking as to what they might do and whether it would be a U.S. military and U.S. allies focus or more civilian focus?
Well, if I had to speculate, you know, I think the response here is going to be very measured and very thought out. You know, I think they're going to take a little bit of time here. If you look at what happened with the Sands Corporation, that attack occurred roughly 2.5 months after Mr. Adelson's comments.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to take their time. They've got to be very careful here because of the geopolitical stage. You know, everyone's vying for regional hegemony, and some of their alleged recent attacks in the Persian Gulf have basically led to multiple nations getting involved in security there in the Strait of Hormuz, making sure that, you know, commerce is flowing, and it was probably counterproductive to their original goal and intent. So I think they are going to probably use proxies, to your earlier point, if they do decide to respond in the cyber domain. And it's, you know, it's unclear what that timeline would look like, but I would venture to guess it's something in the 2 to 4 month range, mm-hmm. just, you know, mm-hmm. again, based on that historical precedent.
And when we talk about groups like Hezbollah or the Houthi rebels, these are not groups that in and of themselves have cyber capabilities, to the best of your knowledge.
Yeah, to my knowledge, they don't have great capabilities, or they're relatively immature capabilities. When we talk about proxies, we're really talking about groups that are at least within sort of an arm's length distance from, you know, the Ayatollah or the IRGC themselves inside of Iran.
And you guys have written that in some ways makes the outcome or the action itself less predictable, that they are not, that it is not a 100% government or military run operation. The fact that they are willing to use outside contractors inserts an element of unpredictability into things.
It really does, because if you look at the way these different groups operate, some of them are much more methodical than others. And if they're rushing to send a response, obviously that's where mistakes are made. That's where operational security lapses happen. So, you know, we've seen that in the past. And some of these groups are very methodical and slow in terms of intelligence gathering. So I think this is, again, an example of where they're going to be very thoughtful, and they're going to be very intentional about what they want to do here and really take their time in doing it.
Are there ways for, you know, U.S. companies or organizations, you know, public, private sector organizations, to prepare for, you know, let's say, you know, let's just be honest, in the big scheme of things, an attack that's fairly unlikely. It's fairly unlikely that your company or you as an individual are going to get targeted by Iran. But if it's in there in your risk profile, even remotely, what might you do to harden your defenses?
Well, I think first and foremost, you really want to take the time to understand the tools, the tactics, the techniques that these Iranian groups have used in prior campaigns and attacks. And, you know, I think you want to be realistic with yourself in terms of how you rank your security controls against some of those tools and tactics, you know, your visibility, things like whether you have logging on, you know, basic things like Windows, whether you can observe, you know, PowerShell activity, those sorts of things. And then I think business continuity is really important. You know, assume that there may be an impact to the business and that it is a real risk. And if there was some sort of destructive malware that was deployed inside your environment, you know, what does the business continuity plan look like? What does that scenario look like? How long will it take you to restore operations from a business perspective? I think that's very important. And of course, there's things that we always talk about, like educating users, you know, related to phishing or social media. And that's good stuff. But I think in this case, where you're talking about a very truncated sort of time frame, expecting a response here, that, you know, that's really where the focus should be.
So we shouldn't necessarily expect anything in the immediate future, immediate being days, hours, days, even weeks. But you do expect that there is going to be some kind of response, you know, as we look out further in the sort of months time period, and that they'll pick their opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there'll be plenty of website defacements from ideologically aligned with kind of Iran and what's going on here. We'll deface websites and that'll go on here. But to your point, I think they're going to pick their spots and be very opportunistic and intentional about how they respond. And I think it's really important for them to try and get away with it in an unattributable fashion, because, again, the optics matter on the world stage right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of players involved in the game here. So I think, you know, they're going to be careful, but I do think they're going to respond.
We've talked about, and final question, you know, we've talked about Russia, you know, and maybe China infiltrating critical infrastructure here in the United States for reasons, you know, TBD. We're not really sure what they're up to. But is Iran one of those actors, or is that kind of beyond their abilities right now?
I think they're certainly interested. I think, you know, I don't remember the year, but I do remember that there was allegedly some activity at a small dam in New York a couple years back that had their fingerprints
on it. Troy, New York, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So I think they're very interested in it. You know, whether they have any sort of opportunities currently, whether they've mapped out any real infrastructure, it's pure speculation at this point.
We'll find out.
Yes, we will.
Yeah. You know, back when President Trump had basically backed the U.S. out of the agreement with Iran, deproliferation agreement, reimposed sanctions, you guys had said, you know, this might prompt the regime to carry out cyber attacks in mm-hmm. response, mm-hmm. kind of register their ire with that at the reimposition of sanctions. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, that didn't happen in the months after that. Do we know why there wasn't a sort of, you know, campaign of kind of rattling the bars and saying, how dare you?
So it's difficult to say. We have been tracking a lot of activity over the last year. Again, more the intelligence gathering activity than destructive, you know, large scale attack activity. And again, I do think that the geopolitical situation is very fragile for them. And I think, you know, at that time, they were still very much hoping that Europe would come to their aid, you know, as an ally in trying to find some sort of solution to that 2015 agreement. And I think, you know, part of it was they really didn't want to add ammunition to, you know, the argument that, you know, they weren't trustworthy, basically, in terms of that agreement. So that's my own speculation. But I do think there are a lot of different issues at play there.
Vivek Gundert of Recorded Future, thank you so much for coming on, talking to us on Security Ledger Podcast about Iran's cyber threat.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Vivek Gundert is a senior vice president of global intelligence at the firm Recorded Future.